Welcome to Wellness Renaissance and Gluten-Free and Other Special Diets podcast, supporting you on your unique journey to finding your best health. Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening. This is Judy with Wellness Renaissance. I want to, first of all, thank everybody who has subscribed on iTunes. I really do appreciate it. That very much is helpful to the podcast. If you have an opportunity and a desire to leave a review, also a very wonderful and appreciated thing, especially a positive review. Also, subscribing lets you know when the podcasts have come out. You get to see what the topics are, as well as in your feed, you will then see all of the podcasts. If you look on the actual podcast page, you will see that at some point numbers start dropping off because they don't actually show you all of the episodes. So that is where subscribing can be a very helpful thing to you. You can, of course, also go to the website, wellnessrenaissance.com. You'll see podcast. Click on the podcast. It'll bring you to the page. You can see all of the episodes, starting with the newest first, but there will also be a subscribe button if you would like an easy way to find a subscribe button to iTunes. Today, I am sharing an interview with Shane Cortland, who is a philosophy professor at West Virginia University. And we're talking about the keto diet. And a few things I want to mention before I actually dive into the interview and discussion that I had with Shane a while back. I first of all want to say that I'm going to be having two episodes on the keto diet. That is not to say that I'm promoting the diet. I am exploring and taking opportunities that are coming to me. So I was excited to talk to Shane because he's had some really fantastic experiences with the diet, and he isn't a health practitioner. So he's a quote unquote normal guy sharing his experience. And the other person whose interview I will be playing a few episodes down the road is a personal trainer. She's a weightlifter. She's been doing this for a really long time in a little bit of a different way than we think of keto now, just because of science changing over time. I wanted the opportunity to hear from both of them and know that I am exploring and this is something I'm interested in learning about. I don't really promote any particular type of diet. I am always kind of on the search for what my body wants. So fad diets, quote unquote, fad diets aren't really something that I participate in. And I'm not really saying that this is a fad diet. What got me really interested in this is my history with the paleo diet, which was probably the easiest diet for me personally to switch to. And I had a really good experience on it when I did it absolutely faithfully. Second of all, I have been hearing so much about the keto diet in how good people are feeling. And random strangers, Uber drivers, people all over the map that I've run into who are just happy and they're feeling good. And this is the diet they feel like they can do. So I'm exploring that and sharing some different perspectives. I personally am interested in doing some additional research on long-term effects, or the best information that we have for the long-term effects. And I'm not gonna be blind to the fact that we're talking about meat, and many people talk about bacon and sausage and all of those types of things that do bring up some concern for some people when it comes to health and heart health and colon health and all of those things. So I'm not saying that that isn't there. I'm really curious about how all of that works long term. I certainly come to this diet with some thoughts and questions, be it the processed meat, the sourcing of the meat that maybe is the thing we need to be paying attention to, and does low carb cause us problems over time, or does it benefit us? I can see multiple sides of this. Yes, I think overall health is absolutely a concern, but it's hard to argue when you're feeling better than you have ever felt in your life. And for some people, that is the case. That has to be somewhat at least considered as well. I certainly have no desire to tell somebody to do, and I am not telling anybody to do this diet. Again, this is an exploration. I don't want to tell anybody to do something that might end up harming them. The standard American diet already does a great job on its own, and I'm not trying to add to the confusion, but I certainly don't want to dismiss something that seems to be having such a positive effect on people and maybe could offer them something in the short term or the long term. I just want to toss that out there just so you know where I'm coming from and the mindset that I'm entering this discussion and exploration. Here we go. Let's head into our conversation with Shane.
Hello, Shane, and welcome. Thanks so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. So Shane Cortland was one of my philosophy teachers when I was at, or professors, when I was at UMD. Anybody who's listened to my intro podcast knows that I was a philosophy minor and a public health education and promotions major. And Shane, I mentioned this in my intro podcast because I talked about how appreciative I was for the perspective I had as a philosophy as well as a health education person.
Cool.
Because, yeah, well, one of the things that Shane did, it was you were the, was it the head of the Center for Ethics and?
I was the director.
Director.
Yeah, so okay. Basically, I was the only sort of employee for the center. So.
Okay. And the proper title was the Center of Ethics and Public Policy. Okay. And one of the things that I loved that you did was just these amazing topics, and a lot of them really actually had to do, you covered a lot of ground, but a lot of them had to do with health, and I know you talked about the end of life issues and a lot of things that I felt our entire major, the health education major, should have been at, because it was just very, this is the meat of the sandwich, this is the real life stuff. And when, as a health education major, a lot of what we're looking at is creating programs, but having the knowledge and the understanding and the perspectives that were going on in a lot of the philosophy classes and the events you were having were the things you kind of need, and I think anyway, to really help broaden your ability to create good programs and have the perspectives. So I really appreciated that I meandered very slowly through my education to get that. It was good stuff.
Well, I appreciate it. It's good to hear. I'm happy that you got something out of it.
Oh gosh, yeah, no, it was great. I think it really has given me a lot of the perspectives that I've used to pull a lot of things together, which I love.
Good.
And I'm interviewing Shane, as anybody might be listening, going, okay, so philosophy teacher, health podcast, what up? but Shane, you have had some really interesting success on the keto diet, and one of the things that I like to do in life and in podcast is to really explore what all of this means, what are all the options, and what's working for people. I don't really subscribe to one particular way of eating, or I think there's a lot of things, and it's kind of like whichever vitamin you're deficient in is the one that you're going to feel great when you get. And so our bodies are all really different. And so I'm really interested in having you here today because I want to learn about the diet, and I want to learn your perspective, how you came upon it, how it's worked for you, and let's start there.
Sure. So the weird way that I heard about it actually was through another podcast, funny enough, and it was Joe Rogan's podcast. And Joe Rogan was interviewing some guest, and he's brought up the notion of ketosis on his show a number of times, and ultimately, just a ketogenic diet. I was curious as to what it was, and as I looked more into it on my own, primarily just through the internet, I began to find out that, some of its principles are actually kind of interesting, right? The different notions of how you burn energy, whether it be primarily carbohydrate-based or primarily fat-based into, say, these things called ketones. I thought the science was interesting to it, and I had known that other people have had some success with it. In fact, even people that I knew at UMD had success with it. So the associate dean, Olaf Koki, he was on the ketogenic diet, and he had lost like 50 pounds, right? Okay. So in part because of the stuff I'd read and the stuff I'd heard about it and seeing the success of somebody else that I had known, I figured I'd give it a try.
And so how long has it been since you started, and kind of where are you at with it?
It's been almost a year since I've been on it.
Okay.
And I started it, I'd say, probably in mid to late September of last year. When I started it, I was at about 217 pounds.
Okay.
And I'd say about 6 months, maybe 7 months into it, I had dropped 47 pounds.
Wow.
And it was strictly through a diet change.
Okay.
So it wasn't any sort of change in my physical activity. It was just in what I was eating. Now, admittedly, I can't really say that my diet was healthy prior to this.
Okay.
Right? So it wasn't like I was eating, you know, the healthiest of healthy foods. I was eating junk food and, you know, fast food and, you know, the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. But I had tried other diets before with varying success.
Okay.
And so I was curious to see if this one would be more effective. And it was. Yeah.
Let's talk about what you do eat on the diet and what you do not eat
sure.
on the diet. And then, like, how strict were and are you when it comes to that?
Okay, so it's easier for me to tell you what I don't eat. And
okay.
that's pretty much anything with a carbohydrate.
Okay.
So to keep things in perspective, in order to get my body into what they call ketosis, mm-hmm. right, where it's starting to burn fat for energy, I have to make sure that I consume maybe about 20 grams or less carbohydrates in a day.
Okay, wow.
Right? And to kind of put that in perspective, I mean, that's like one yogurt cup, and I blew my diet if I did that.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that really is sneaky, too, is you know, sugar. Sugar is in quite a bit of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find things that you never even consider, like ketchup, right? You know, it's got sugar in it, and I can't have ketchup now,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, pretty much any kind of sauce you have to watch out for. So when it comes to that, breads, any sorts of, like, you know, pasta or anything to that effect, I can't. Any sort of sugar is pretty much forbidden. But I can eat meat, but I don't want to gorge myself on protein.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the Atkins diet.
Right.
that's we really try to aim at
to make.
Yeah. So a lot of people confuse the two. When they know I'm low carb, they right away say, oh, you're on Atkins. And you're like, well, no, there's a different emphasis. So the emphasis on this diet, the diet that I'm on, unlike the Atkins diet, is that we put a lot of what we eat into fat. Right. So fat is what we're looking for.
Okay.
And so you'll find that what I have each morning, and this has kind of become my daily ritual, is what many people refer to as bulletproof coffee.
Oh, yep. Mhm.
Mhm. And initially I was skeptical of it. I knew Olaf did it, you know, the associate dean from UMD, but the very notion of what goes in bulletproof coffee was kind of off-putting at first. And I'll just tell you how what it is.
Yeah.
It's 2 tablespoons of butter, and then it is 2 tablespoons of coconut oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can try to add some stuff for flavor if you want, but it's so thick that you need a blender to blend it together,
mm-hmm.
right? And the butter has to be a special type of butter. It has to be a grass-fed butter because of the different types of fat that goes between grass-fed and grain-fed
mm-hmm.
animals.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is that as time goes on, you become almost addicted to that coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It also works as, how would you say, a meal replacement. So I don't usually eat anything until, like, say, the afternoon.
Okay.
The coffee will kind of tide me over because it's about, to put things in perspective, that coffee itself has about 500 calories in it.
Okay.
And they're pretty much all from fat.
Right.
So, yeah, so it's a big fat bomb. And the good news about it is, too, is that what I've noticed is that cognitively I kind of feel, how would you say, much more alert after I've drank that. And
okay.
I think it's the combination of both the caffeine and the massive load of fat that I took in.
Okay.
Yeah,
that was one question I was going to ask you, was kind of how you felt. I had some of the things that I've read was that people say when they're on this diet, they feel, coffee or no coffee, they feel more mentally alert. And I know you like your coffee, so that was very good thing to have on this diet for you. I've actually done the coffee. I did it for a little bit because I had to try it. It just uh-huh. sounded too intriguing, butter in my coffee. I was like, okay, I got to give this a shot. And I have a Vitamix, so it made it super easy, and it just comes out as this lovely, creamy beverage, and I threw a little bit of vanilla in it.
Yep.
And I thought actually I felt more sustained through the day, you know, definitely was filling, but
yep.
then more sustaining. And I felt like the energy, I didn't get a high from the coffee as much as I just kind of got this long-term positive mental flow going on.
I agree. And the nice thing about the diet generally
mm-hmm.
is that there are no sort of peaks and valleys
okay.
when it comes to energy. And so you feel, before, I'm sure you probably heard of the expression being hangry.
Where I don't know
it's
that
like
I
a
have.
Combination of being angry and hungry.
Interesting.
The Snickers commercials do pretty well, right?
Oh.
You know, when they try to show people who desperately need to eat and it changes their personality.
Yes.
Right? The cool thing about this diet is that you really don't get that anymore.
Okay.
Right? And I think the scientific explanation, and I'm not a scientist, but I think this is from what I heard, is that because you're not going through this sort of blood sugar rises and lows, mm-hmm. right? And because your energy doesn't come from that so much, you're much more sort of on this sort of even par, constant flow of energy the whole time, because you're constantly just burning fat.
Okay.
Or ketones, to be more specific.
Right.
But yeah, so, I mean, it works out well. The coffee's good. As far as food is concerned, I find myself, I mean, pretty much I eat meat. Cheeses help too. Mm-hmm. I pretty much avoid fruit, mostly because a lot of fruit has natural sugars in it. Mm-hmm. I find myself eating a lot more broccoli now than I used to. And broccoli has carbs in it, but if that's the only carbs I'm taking in, I don't feel so bad.
Right.
And let's see, I'll eat fish, obviously. I will, let's see what else. I think what other kind of diet stuff. There are actual nice recipes online that you can get for a very ketogenic sort of, you know, attempts to mimic food that people normally eat.
Mm.
So there are like ketogenic breads, but they're primarily just egg and coconut flour.
Oh, right.
I don't really go that far. That's a little bit too labor intense for me. So I find myself, you know, usually trying to eat, you know, like a little bit of meat. Pork roast is really good. I've found various, I think Hormel makes it. It's a microwavable pork roast.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I know. And the thing about it was, you mean, first thing you're thinking of when you say microwave and pork roast
right.
is how terrible can this be?
Right.
But it's not bad. It's got this special container that cooks it in a juice, and it's really good. It's a decent meat. So I eat that with a whole bunch of broccoli a lot. Eggs, I eat a lot of eggs. I love eggs. It's pretty good. And then, of course, if I do have salads, and I do, mm-hmm. If I have dressing at all, and sometimes I don't, it's usually like really fatty sort of dressings, whether it be blue cheese or maybe like a thick ranch. No lights, it has to all be full because lights usually compensate by adding sugar.
Right.
So I mean that's generally the sort of day-to-day thing. Now the cool thing about it too is that you'll notice that your appetite goes down when you're on the diet. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple reasons. One is that when your body is in sort of a state of ketosis, that's a common symptom is to have less of an appetite, right? Mm-hmm. And so you kind of know that the diet is working when you don't want to eat as much.
Mm.
The other thing is that the types of food that you're eating are just naturally filling foods, right? So, you know, the proteins, if you eat those, the fats, you'll feel fuller longer.
Mm-hmm.
So I can find myself eating less on this diet, right, and being sustained longer. So unlike other diets that I've tried, I really don't feel hungry ever.
Okay. That's a nice place to be.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, I've tried reduced calorie diets, and reduced calorie diets, universally, I go to bed hungry.
Right.
Right? Always.
Mm-hmm.
And you can understand why your body's demanding more, and you have to basically tell it no.
Right.
And that's what it's using for energy, and you feel drained, and you feel at the same time just like you could just ravish and eat. You constantly start obsessing about food.
Mm-hmm.
Right? and that's a bad place to be if you're trying to diet.
Right. Yeah, definitely doesn't help the sustainability of the diet itself at all.
No.
So how easy was this to switch to for you, like to get on it?
Well, it had some hard points and it had some easy points, right? So the hard points was, I think, as I mentioned before, was noticing that sugar was in quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
right? And that to me, it was kind of difficult kind of figuring out initially what I can and what I can't eat, primarily because, you know, sugar is everywhere. The easier part of it, though, is that a lot of the foods that are normally forbidden by diets are not forbidden by this diet,
mm-hmm.
right? So if I decide all of a sudden now that I want to have a really nice steak, that's fine. My diet's totally cool with that,
mm-hmm.
right? No matter how fatty the steak is, no matter how much butter I put on the steak, it's fine,
mm-hmm.
right? And so a lot of people are like, yeah, that's awesome. That's great, right?
Right.
But you will find every once in a while that you will crave to have you know, either sugar or bread. That's normal.
Right.
You know, you haven't had it in a while. You remember some of your favorite foods are this way.
Right.
And so you will have these cravings occasionally. But by and large, I think the benefit of this diet is that the food is filling and you seem sustained by it. And these are foods that most people would view as cheat foods, mm-hmm. but you can just eat it regularly.
Right. Yeah. It's, I'm thinking about for myself, I haven't done this. I've done paleo, and that was the easiest diet for me to switch to. And my doctor said, she's, well, you probably just didn't have the up and down blood sugar levels. Like you're saying, you're not eating sugar. And I think people don't realize what power sugar has over us, not only in the, I want that department, but also just how much it influences so much of the processes in your body. And so you take that out in any diet. And I think that mm-hmm. you start to, you know, feel the benefits and the lack of the cravings and stuff like that. And a diet, like you're saying, you're not feeling hungry. And the things that make people not be able to stick to diets are that ravishing hunger or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that makes a lot of sense. Do you have concerns about, like, do you think you're kind of going to stick with this? Do you have concerns about nutrients that you might be missing from cutting the variety of vegetables and fruits and that kind of thing that you're not so much consuming?
Not so much. I mean, because there's many ways to get nutrients. So I can, you know, substitute out and alter my diet in various different ways. I think the closest thing that ever concerned me at first was because of the fat, I was initially worried about cholesterol.
Okay.
But what I have noted, and of course there's plenty of literature on this that can be found on the web, is that even if you do see a small cholesterol bump, usually you also see the cholesterol bump in both the good and the bad, and the good usually is a stronger bump with the keto diet.
Okay.
So your sort of ratio between the two is always going to be kind of on the good side, the healthier side, okay. Right?
And that's what we're looking
because
for.
You're taking in – yes. Exactly. And so the funny thing that I also found too is that a lot of the doctors that I would talk to, and they weren't nutritionists, but they were less familiar about the ketogenic diet than I thought they would be,
uh-huh.
right? So I found myself having to explain this to my doctor, you know, when I'm getting my cholesterol checked, mm-hmm. you know, why I wanted it checked and why I was doing this. And I told him about the diet and he was just not familiar with it,
uh-huh.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But he was just, again, he was a general practitioner. He wasn't a specialist in a sort of way.
Sure.
So that's when I got it, you know, he called me back and he's like, look at, you know, I see your cholesterol. Initially, the overall number is higher than normal, but not dangerously. That's fine. Right. But he goes, I just wanted to let you know about this. And I'm like, well, what about the ratio? And he's like, oh, we don't look at ratios. And that surprised me because everybody else knows. Yeah, that's exactly right. I was like, I think you should look at ratios.
Yeah, that's kind of right? Like what's going on now. Right.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So, and I think part of it was because he was a general practitioner and he wasn't a nutritionist. And because of that, you know, maybe it's just he was just doing his duty by informing me what he found and not really. This wasn't his area of specialty, obviously,
right.
Which is fine. But I feel fine. I mean, I've noticed, I mean, generally my weight's gone down, as I've told you. I have low blood pressure.
Lower than before.
So. Well, that I don't know because I don't know if I did a pre and a post, but I've never had high blood pressure.
Okay.
But so if anything, I can say it's remained at a steady state and this hasn't changed or altered it in any way.
Sure.
But all my other markers are fine. Like I said, the only thing I saw a bump in cholesterol, but the bump in cholesterol was compensated for by the bump in good cholesterol, which
right.
was significant. I mean, like
right.
huge.
Wow. That's interesting.
So.
That's very interesting. I know the just recently I came across I think it's the American Heart Association had just done the whole saturated fat is horrible and killing us all. And I haven't actually
yep.
read that article to see if they had new information, but I read the rebuttal to that
yeah.
article.
Yeah.
You know, basically saying, you know, no, that's old information and that kind of thing. And it's always interesting for me because I work because of some of the stuff that I do, I teach pre-diabetes prevention classes too, and so this is always a conversation that everybody's going into of, okay, this is what the American Heart Association is, but this is what I'm experiencing, and how do I deal with this? So it's very interesting
yeah.
when the numbers come out for people and you have kind of a real-world example of what people are experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really good, and you're definitely eating coconut oil. So.
Yeah, a lot of coconut oil, at least 2 tablespoons a day, and it's the liquid form. And the liquid form is more concentrated in fat, specifically MCTs.
Okay.
So, yeah, a lot of coconut oil.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. But tasty, gotta say.
Yeah.
Oh, and then some of the research that I had looked into,
sure,
as far as I see that nuts and seeds are certainly okay.
I avoid them, though, because there's carbohydrates in them.
Okay.
You can, but in very, 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 very moderated amounts, right? So it's not like I don't have to prohibit myself from them,
okay,
obviously. But there is the downside that there are, well, carbs in them, and that will add to your total and get you out of ketosis.
Okay. And 20 grams is your goal?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, for the day. 20 grams a day. That's the thing.
Wow. Okay.
So it's ridiculously low. Now, the good news is that as you maintain, once you get to a level that you want to keep, like as far as your weight and whatnot, you can probably back off a little bit and not constantly put yourself in ketosis.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just have a low-carb diet as opposed to a ketogenic diet,
sure,
right? And so you'd be able to up maybe your grams a little bit, maybe get more nuts in, maybe have bread here and there, but very rarely.
Mm-hmm.
But so there is this ability to do that. So I'm in a maintaining phase where instead of doing just the bread here and there, I'll allow myself a cheat day, right? Or even a cheat, you know, meal. Often it's just a meal, mm-hmm, right? That I would normally not let myself. And then I go right back to the diet. Now, the catch with this diet, though, when it comes to cheating,
mm-hmm,
is that it'll take a little bit for your body to bounce back,
mm-hmm,
right? So you'll feel the effects of what you ate for a little bit longer than I said with other diets that I've been on. And that's mostly because of what your body's burning and how it's burning. Because if you just loaded yourself with carbohydrates and it's been burning ketones this whole time, it's got to go through the carbs, then hit the ketone.
Do you know anybody who has like done this for a period of time and lost the weight they wanted to lose and then kind of backed off and gone back to either normal, their normal, or still a good, quote unquote, healthy eating, just not so low in carb? Do you know anybody who's done that? What their body's response was?
No, mostly because. Yeah, I don't know that because I don't know many people who went on this diet. So the only person that I knew who went on a diet is Olaf Kölke, and he stayed on it,
okay,
right? So I think the concern is that you could go on a different diet and try to maintain your weight, and that could work from what I gather and what I've read.
Right.
But if you just went back to eating the way that you were, you're going to go right back up.
Okay, right.
Right. So which is to be expected.
Sure.
But I don't know of anybody who, just because I don't know many people who are on the diet personally, who do this diet and then switch off.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of just trying to do a little research on the long-term, you know, what people were saying about long-term effects,
yeah,
if there's any concerns or going on and off it. And
sure,
I didn't really find a lot of good information. I read something by Mark Sisson, who does the Primal Blueprint, a diet, and he was kind of saying, yeah, we don't really know, you know, if some people's bodies really respond well for health challenges to this diet. And he's like, you know, for somebody like that,
mm-hmm,
definitely fine to be on. And he says, yeah, it's probably okay to go in and out of a little bit if you want to make sure you can have your summer fruits and things like that. And I'm always interested just from hearing other diets and people's experiences when they cut the carbs, to how mm-hmm much does their body readjust? So all of a sudden when they get carbs, their body's like holding on to weight like nobody's business, which is similar to people who go on an extended, you know, low-cal diet too. It's like their body shifts. I know a few people who have gone on really low-calorie diets,
yeah,
and it's affected the rest of their life. And so maybe that's something somebody,
yeah,
wants to consider if they want to do this for long term.
Reminds me of that. Remember The Biggest Loser, that TV show?
Yes.
I think it's still on even. Or maybe it was last, it just went off. They did a great little expose on the people who were previously on the show and how this affected their metabolism after the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And how a lot of them gained their weight right back because the metabolism gets so messed up.
Right.
So, yeah, no, it's a concern. And I have, you know, of course, read people who, I mean, if you go off the carb diet, you expect to gain some weight back. You
right
should definitely expect to.
Right.
But it's not clear, again, because longitudinal studies, I haven't seen many on them.
Right.
On the ketogenic diet in particular, what actually would occur?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I've certainly talked to a lot, you know, a lot of people who've done different things with how they manage their carbs. And I know, I remember talking to a couple at an event I was at who were basically sticking between or below 50 grams a day was their kind of number. And
uh-huh
they were, you know, talking about, and they weren't doing the keto diet, and that wasn't really hardly a thing. I remember when talking to them, but they were just talking about how great they felt, and you know, and I mean, we live in a very carb-rich society, so it's it's a little bit of a challenge.
It's tough. I mean,
how do you find that with eating out?
It's interesting. So many places will have at least, I think, one or two things on the menu that's pretty easy for me to convert to my diet. Mm-hmm. So, like, if I go to, like, say, Applebee's, you know, I can easily get a steak there. Mm-hmm. But then you got to note the side dishes. So sometimes the side dishes will secretly bring in carbs, right? So you have to find out. So I usually end up substituting out a potato for, and I'm putting broccoli in instead, right? Or maybe some vegetables. And so usually what I end up eating out with is just basically meat and vegetables, right?
Right.
I'm sauce phobic when it comes to eating out, mostly because I don't know what they put in their sauce.
Right.
And that's usually, you know, like a secret place to bring in sugars. Mm-hmm. And so I have to avoid sauces. So any sort of like meat before, like barbecue meat, I have to be careful with. Mm-hmm. Why? Because I don't know what they've used in the barbecuing process that could actually add carbs that I didn't anticipate. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But most places, it's not too hard. I mean, most places I can find something, right? I have been able to do so. But you're right. It's very carb full at most restaurants. Either it's going to be in breads or sugars. It's there. Sometimes it's just by subtracting things that I find a way to make it by, right? So if I wanted to, I could eat a burger, just not eat the bun,
right?
Don't put any ketchup on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are things to be done. And what I've noticed a lot is that I used to be, I'd say for about 4 years, I was a vegetarian. And similar to the vegetarian diet, you feel the same sort of pressure in, you want to know what's in your food all the time,
mm-hmm.
right? And that it's more about having a hard time finding it at restaurants than, how would you say, not enjoying eating it or not being fulfilled,
mm-hmm.
right? So it feels much more like just having a peculiar diet than being on, how would you say, a diet to lose weight.
Gotcha.
So that's the difference I've noticed in going out to eat in particular, too. It's just that, you know, you just got to find something that fits. But once you do, you feel fine and satisfied.
How many times do you ask to have the bun removed and they're concerned that you have celiac disease?
Well, I believe it or not, I really don't like eating burgers without buns.
Ah.
So usually I just have steak when I go out.
Gotcha.
So I've been able to avoid that, or I have salad. So I've yet to even ask for that. But,
okay.
You know, people do the gluten-free thing, I think, maybe has cast some camouflage on my diet,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
So maybe they think I'm really just a trendy kind of person
right.
if I do ask that. But
right.
I have yet to actually ask somebody to take the bun off. Sometimes what I'll do is, because I'm, you know, if I'm feeling really shy, I could just, how would you say, remove the bun after the fact.
Right.
I know that's wasteful. But, you know, if you don't really want to put people out, you can always just do that.
Right.
But yeah, it works out. Steaks are really good. It's forced me to actually learn how to cook steak, which I never had to do before.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
What about taking food with you?
So lunches I do. So definitely for lunches. And a lot of that is me having some sort of, you know, meat, cheese. I usually, a good, I would say, sweet substitute,
because
I have been eating a lot of sugar-free Jell-O.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Interesting.
And that works out pretty well. Yeah, so I mean, it's good and sweet, but there's no sugar in it.
What do they put in sugar?
It's filling it up. I don't know. It's probably some sort of, I don't know if it's sucralose or something like that. I really should know, but I haven't. I haven't actually checked out, but it works out.
Huh.
I've noticed that's it. That's primarily my source of sweet.
Okay.
Comes by sugar-free Jell-O.
Okay. Interesting. All right.
Yeah.
I saw the list of okay foods was, you know, that they had stevia and erythritol and monk fruit and that kind of stuff as options too.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned the vegetarian diet. So when you were vegetarian, were you vegan or quote unquote just vegetarian?
Just vegetarian.
Okay.
So I allowed myself eggs and I allowed myself cheese. So animal byproducts were fine with my diet.
Okay. And how did you feel as a vegetarian? Like, compare being a vegetarian to how you're feeling right now.
Well, I feel better now, and the reason why, I think, is because I was a horrible vegetarian. So I wasn't just, being a vegetarian doesn't mean I ate well.
Right. True. Yeah.
Just mean I avoided certain foods. Right. And so at the time I was doing it, it was more for ethical reasons than it was for health reasons. I mean, in fact, I was quite fit when I was a vegetarian, but it had everything to do with my age and nothing to do with how I was treating my body.
Okay.
But I was eating poor foods. Now, the foods that I'm eating, I feel much more energy, and it's partly because of what it does. In part, there's no sort of sugars up and downs that I normally would experience.
Okay. Yeah. Sugar makes a huge difference. I mean, like you said, if you're on a diet that is supposed to be healthy, but you're eating junk food in that realm of okayness, it doesn't matter. You know, it's like people who are eating gluten-free that switch to all the gluten-free cakes and cookies and breads, and it's like, okay, that's probably, you're not going to feel a whole lot better. You know, you might if gluten is absolutely your thing. I mean, I do know people who have switched to all of that and feel amazing because their body can't handle wheat, you know, but still,
yeah,
it still has an effect for sure. So do you have any resources that you found really helpful that people might check into if they're kind of curious and looking for some solid information?
The various websites, like, I don't know, I use Diet Doctor a little bit.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with the site. I can send you the link if you need it. But
it's
just, dietdoctor.com. And that gives at least some basic information on what it is. And they even, I believe, have some recipes, too, if people are curious exactly what you're going to try to do. So that resource is helpful. Otherwise, it's generally just doing internet searches. And you know, not every website is as reputable as another. But the thing that I always look for, and this probably comes as no surprise to you, is I want to see where their sources are from, and to see if they actually have, you know, reputable publications behind their claims, right? So the biggest thing is when you're going out there for keto stuff, and there's a lot of sort of fat phobia when it comes to dieting, where people are just, you know, they want to have diets that are always low in fat, but usually for these sort of outdated reasons. I try to keep that in mind when I'm looking through my stuff, right? That, you know, diet views change over time, right? And I try to look for the most recent data I possibly can find.
Okay. Yeah, I know. I saw one site, and I don't remember which one it was. It was very pro, like you were mentioning sauces earlier. It was very pro sauces. And I saw nowhere on it did it sort of say, but be careful, because like you're saying, I'm thinking sauces are usually the most dangerous thing at restaurants. You know, there's always just a pile of junk and sugar and. So I was looking for the disclaimer on the site to say, be careful, look for these things. And it wasn't there. I was like, come on, people.
That's shocking, yeah.
Yeah. And you kind of shared a few of the easy snacks and kind of easy meals that you have. Any other ideas for take-along snacks that you've got?
There's other, like, I've had summer sausages that works out pretty well, but you eat that in moderation. Let's see, jerky. There's various sorts of beef jerky that you can use, but you have to be careful with that too, because some beef jerky, a lot of it actually, is sort of marinated and stuff high in carbs. So you have to find these sort of older style beef jerky, and that stuff is usually a lower carb. So a lot of the stuff you find at the store, if per serving is like 7 or 8 grams of carbs for jerky, beef jerky.
Okay.
That's just in the sort of flavoring they put in it. So you need to find the older sort of, you know, more cowboy-esque beef jerky. But that stuff won't be so bad. It helps out. I mean, so if you feel like you're hungry and you want a quick little patch up, that'll work out pretty well. Tuna fish I usually eat a lot of. I like tuna. And so I've enjoyed that frequently. And see what else have I had that's really good. Vegetables, again, broccoli is my sort of go-to thing. And the nice thing about my diet is I can load cheese on it if I want to, right, to make it a little bit more, you know, more pleasant. But, you know, I like greens. I try to get, you know, as much greens as I can. So my carbs in the day pretty much are all based off the greens that I eat. You know, anything from Brussels sprouts to, you know, broccoli to, you know, if I need to, I guess cauliflower is technically not green, but I do eat spinach too. But those things help. Again, like I said, there are carbs in them. Mm-hmm. So I use those as the things that produce the carbs, and then everything else I try to just stay away from.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I know this diet is somewhat controversial, you know, for people and just the amount of fat taking in and things like that. And then, you know, but it is interesting challenging people, depending on where they're at with their food, of looking at how many vegetables you probably do eat a day. Like, you're probably still getting more vegetables than a lot of people.
I definitely feel like I'm taking in more than I used to, right? Uh-huh. So, I mean, if anything, I'd say that, you know, I would eat so many carbs and I'd have barely any vegetables at all on my previous diet. Where now, on the other hand, you know, what's taking the place of the carbs is either meat or vegetables.
Right.
And so vegetables do play a really large role in what I eat. I've never in my life eaten as much broccoli as I have before on this diet.
Okay.
I mean, it's just an insane amount of broccoli, and to the point where my wife complains about my broccoli consumption. So, it's true. It's true. It doesn't smell nice when you cook it.
That's a bummer about some of those healthy vegetables. It's like, well, if it smells really bad, it's probably really good for you.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. But, you know, like I said, so in that sort of sense, I definitely think I'm eating healthier than what I used to be, even according to the traditional understandings of diet,
right?
Because of the broccoli. But also, I've noticed that just because I'm eating less of stuff, I think that's also been quite helpful, too.
Mm.
My portion control was just crazy before. I didn't have any, essentially. I could easily eat, you know, without blinking twice, a whole large pizza on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's just a ton of bread, ton of carbs. The sauce is full of sugar.
Right.
You know, and now I don't feel that sort of hunger anymore. Right. So I'll just eat a little bit of pork roast and some broccoli, and that's dinner. And sometimes I'll even skip dinner and not feel bad about it. I mean, I don't feel hungry. I just don't feel like eating.
Right.
And that's normal. And that's one of the symptoms of being in ketosis, is you just don't feel hunger like you used to.
Mm-hmm. And you're not starving yourself. You're just not really hungry.
No. Yeah. No, I mean, it's not like I'm withholding something from myself that I want in any sort of way when I do that. It's just that I don't feel the urge, because both the state in which my body is in, namely ketosis, and the foods I've eaten before are the types of foods that are naturally filling.
Mm-hmm.
So that those both kind of create the sort of dynamic duo where there are times in the day that I normally would just gorge myself, and I don't anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's a different control. I mean, I know I've done a bunch of different things and elimination diets and various things, and it is kind of nice when you get to the point where you just, it's not on your mind and it's not the thing that controls you.
Yeah.
You know.
No, it's amazing how much I focus on food before when I was on other diets. I mean, it was to the point where I was obsessing about it, and it was an unhealthy place to be.
Right.
So, yeah, this is much better.
And it's no fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you kind of addressed this before, but I kind of want to come back to it just a little bit, just because I know this is like the Atkins. When people talk about any kind of meat-focused diet, the mindset comes on this huge amount of meat consumption. So like I said, you kind of addressed it a little bit, but when you're talking a portion size, because I knew people who were on Atkins and the amount of meat they would consume was phenomenal to me. And I don't know that that's what the Atkins dude really thought was going to happen, but that's what people use as their excuse to, you know, have as much meat as they wanted. Talk about your portion sizes when it comes to how much you want when you're eating a steak or meat.
Well, let me see if I think the normal portion size, from what I gather, for most people is about the size of your fist when it comes to, say, meat. I may eat a little bit more than that, not that I've measured it out, primarily because, you know, it's taking place of some of my other diet foods that I would normally have, like carbs and whatnot.
Right.
I'm not eating just meat.
Right.
That's definitely not the case. So usually, like, if I'm having one of my typical dinners, like I said, was the pork roast and the broccoli. The broccoli fills half my plate, and then the pork roast is probably a fist and a half.
Okay.
To put things in perspective. And that'll fill me up fine. Now, of course, there's also cheese on the broccoli.
Uh-huh.
Right? To kind of make the broccoli go down a little smoother.
Right.
But by and large, that's usually what I try to do it at. Now, of course, it depends on the meal. So sometimes breakfast is, I may have more bacon than I think other people do, or more sausage than other people do. But, you know, if I do have a steak, it's just one steak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, there are different sizes of steaks. Depends what side dishes I'm getting with them, but usually the side dishes I get are just strictly vegetables.
Okay.
So I do eat, like, in a sense, like Atkins, more meat than I think the average person does. But unlike Atkins, I'm not just slathering pure meat constantly.
Sure.
There's still this sort of heavy reliance upon finding fat. Fat is still the number one goal, right?
Okay,
so I try
right.
to find high fatty stuff more than I want to find proteins.
Do you mind? You mind me asking? What do you know? What your blood type is?
I don't actually.
Oh, okay.
I forgot. I know that's terrible, but I did know once in a while, once upon a time, I guess I remembered, but I don't know what it is at the moment.
I'm just curious.
I'm definitely not a universal donor, that's for sure.
Ah.
But I don't know if that helps at all.
I'm trying to remember my blood type.
I forget which type. I think it's an A. I don't know if it's maybe A negative. I'm guessing.
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm curious only in that I'm O positive, which is.
To
be the oldest blood type, which do really well on paleo and really well on things like this, kind of the quote unquote little more meat focused diets, and
sure.
That's probably why I've never fully been a vegetarian. But I like the idea of vegetarianism. I've done a few weeks of it, and I've never felt incredibly great, and I don't eat a ton of meat.
Sure.
Anything that I've forgotten to ask?
Well, there's another cool thing about this diet that other diets don't have,
okay.
which is interesting, is that it's one of the only diets I know of that it's pretty much at any time easy to empirically measure. And the reason being is that we have plenty of devices used to measure ketones in your body.
Okay.
Right? And usually they're related to diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So what's cool about this is that, you know, you can... There's either, I think there are urine strips, there's, of course, the regular blood test that you'd get, usually for various forms of diabetes that also measure ketones, and there's even, I think, a breath test,
oh, wow.
right? And so you can actually, you know, kind of find out if you're in the right range to be in a sort of state of ketosis, you know, relatively easily, and do so empirically. Now, I never used those myself.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the other symptoms, and the other symptoms of being in ketosis is, one, you have your hunger is reduced, which I have, and you also find that you have to go potty a lot more, like you have to urinate a lot more.
Really?
Because of the diet.
Okay.
Yeah, you do.
Interesting.
And so that's how I always knew I was in a state of ketosis, is that I had those symptoms. But you can, in addition to that, actually get these other measures. And I thought that was always a cool aspect of the diet, is that there are these empirical measures that you can use and pretty much at any state just see, yep, I'm in the zone. This is where I need to be.
Wow.
And my body's in the right place.
Right. That is really cool.
So.
And I kind of forgot to have you do this in the beginning. You're no longer here at UMD. And tell us where you've moved on to.
I am at WVU, which is West Virginia University. I am the director of the Center for Free Enterprise. That is housed within the Department of Economics, which is housed within the College of Business and Economics at WVU. And I run the sort of day-to-day activities of the center there. And I also teach business ethics right now at that center.
You need more people to go through the business ethics class, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
funnel them all your way.
Fair enough.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This has really been
fun.
I appreciate your time and information, and I love hearing people's experience on diets. I think that's really helpful for people to hear and to kind of understand what they might expect, especially when you're kind of reading so much on the internet, the pros and the cons and the goods and the bads. And so I appreciate you. I appreciate your time.
All right. I appreciate talking with you, and it's been fun, and sounds like everything's going great for you. I wish you the best of luck on this podcast. It sounds really interesting.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right.
If this keto thing is intriguing to you and you'd like to learn more, certainly I encourage you to do some research via web and books, whatever calls to you. I also just want to remind you, as mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, In a few weeks, we will have another episode. It will be an interview with DJ. She is a personal trainer and bodybuilder, and she's been living the keto diet for a few years, but really actually much, much longer than that. And you will understand that when she explains her history. She also provides a bunch of resources as well in that interview. Something to look forward to if that is something that you want to learn more about. Thank you for listening. You can, of course, connect on Facebook as well at facebook.com/wellnessren. And if you want to visit me live and in person, if you are in the Duluth area on March 3rd, I will be at the Women's Expo. So come and check it out and say hello. I'll be at booth 90B. Hope to see you there. Otherwise, next week, we'll talk to you soon.